Hello, everyone. Be sure and get your Bible and follow along as we continue in our Bible study through the book of Job. Last time we finished chapter 15, so now we come to chapter 16, and here's Job's answer. Then Job answered and said, I have heard many such things. Miserable comforters are you all. Some help you guys are. You're supposed to come in here and help me out and comfort me and encourage me and help me through this terrible ordeal I'm going through, and you're making it worse. You're making it much harder. You're taking a bad situation and turning it into even a worse situation. Some friends you are. That's Job's answer. Shall vain words have an end, or what emboldeth you that you answer? I also could speak as you do, if your soul were in my soul's stead. I could heap up words against you and shake my head at you and make fun of you and be sarcastic and point the finger at you like you're doing to me if you were sitting here instead of me sitting here in this heap of pain and ashes. But that's not what I would do, he's saying, verse 5. But I would strengthen you with my mouth, and the moving of my lips should assuage your grief, relieve it. I would try to help you. Though I speak, my grief is not assuaged, it's not relieved. And though I forbear, what am I eased? No matter what I do, it doesn't make any difference with you. You just keep smashing away at me. But now he has made me weary. You have made me desolate. You have made desolate all my company, and you have filled me with wrinkles, which is a witness against me, and my leanness rising up in me bears witness to my face. He tears me in his wrath, who hates me. He gnashes upon me with his teeth. My enemy sharpens his eyes upon me, and you're trying to do me in. It's like you're trying to finish the job and end my life with these words. What's going on here? Verse 10, they have gaped upon me with their mouth. They have smitten me upon the cheek reproachfully. They have gathered themselves together against me. God has delivered me to the ungodly and turned me over into the hands of the wicked. I don't know why he's done this, but I know he has a reason for it, and I'm going to learn what I should learn from this. In the meantime, I didn't expect you guys to be the ungodly, wicked men that you're turning out to be, attacking me from every side and not helping me at all. But God's allowing it to happen, and as we know, God has allowed Satan to attack Job because God wants Job to learn a big lesson, but he also knows that Job, with his help, will come through this and be a better man for it. Verse 12, I was at ease, but he has broken me asunder. He has also taken me by my neck and shaken me to pieces and set me up for his mark, his target. His archers compass me round about. He cleaves my reins asunder and does not spare. He pours out my gall upon the ground. He breaks me with breach upon breach. He runs upon me like a giant. All of these troubles are piling in on me for a reason, and God's allowing it to happen, and you guys are acting like you're enjoying being a part of it. I have sewed sackcloth upon my skin and defiled my horn in the dust. I've wallowed around and tried to do whatever I can to ease this pain I'm going through and to cry out to God and to learn this lesson, to repent, but it's not happening. I don't see it. But I'm not going to turn my back on God. Though he slay me, I'm not going to turn my back on him. That was Job's attitude. And that was the right attitude. My face is foul with weeping, and on my eyelids is the shadow of death, not for any injustice in my hands. Also, my prayer is pure. You question whether or not I'm praying to God. My prayer is pure. And I have done good things, and he did. And I have been a servant of God, and he was. But there's a key flaw of self-righteousness that he had not seen before, and he's going to have to come to see it. Verse 18, O earth, cover not thou my blood, and let my cry have no place. Also now, behold, my witness is in heaven, and my record is on high. And God has that record, and the fruits are there, and it's a wonderful record. And God knows that, and you may deny it, you miserable comforters, but God knows and I know. Verse 20, my friends scorned me, but my eye pours out tears unto God. I'm still looking to him. I'm still praying to him. I'm still trusting him. And I'm still submitting to him, no matter what you do, my so-called friends. who sit there and scorn me all the day long. Verse 21, oh, that one might plead for a man with God as a man pleads for his neighbor. Why not pray for me? Why not talk to God for me? Why not beseech God on my behalf instead of attacking me? Verse 22, when a few years are come, then I shall go the way whence I shall not return. I know my years are going to be finished, and it'll be over, but that hasn't happened yet. And you're acting like you want to speed that day, and I don't want that day to come yet. So I'm crying out to God and doing so with tears. Continuing now, chapter 17. Chapter 17 and verse 1. My breath is corrupt. My days are extinct. The graves are ready for me. I'm running out of energy. I'm getting short of breath. My eyes are dim. I know that death is closing in. Are there not mockers with me? Yes, you're on all sides. And doth not my eye continue in their provocation? I see and hear what you're doing. You've got me surrounded. You're cornering me and pounding away on me. Verse 3, lay down now, put me in a surety with you. Who is he that will strike hands with me? Who's going to give me some relief? Who's going to back off and settle down and encourage me like I would if you were in this condition? Verse 4, for you have hid your heart from understanding, therefore shall you not exalt them. You're not trying to understand this situation. You're not trying to realize what I'm going through and trying to get to the bottom of it and help me understand. You're just criticizing, correcting, picking, and blasting away at me. He that speaks flattery to his friends, even the eyes of his children shall fail. He has made me also a byword of the people, and aforetime I was a tabray. What does that mean? That means that now I am treated with contempt. Other translations put it this way, and they're correct. He has made me also a byword of the people. I have become one in whose face they spit, they hold in contempt. That's what it means when it says, aforetime I was a tabray. My eye also is dim by reason of sorrow, and all my members are as a shadow. Upright men shall be astonished at this, and the innocent shall stir up himself against the hypocrite. Upright men would approach this in a different way. But where are the upright men? Where are my friends? Where are you, my supposed close friends? Verse 9, the righteous also shall hold on his way, and he that has clean hands shall be stronger and stronger. But as for you all, do you return and come now? For I cannot find one wise man among you. A righteous and wise man would react differently and would reach out to me in compassion and love and with true understanding. But as for you, I can't find a wise man among you. You've turned into my enemy. Verse 11, my days are past, my purposes are broken off, even the thoughts of my heart. They change the night into day. The light is short because of darkness. If I wait, the grave is my house. I've made my bed in the darkness. I've said to corruption, you are my father, and to the worm, you are my mother and my sister. In other words, I'm rotting. I'm just falling apart. I'm rotting, and I'm dying a slow death, and soon I will be in the grave and turn back to the dust. That's where I'm headed. But what are you doing to help ease all of this? Nothing. You're making it worse. And where is now my hope? As for my hope, who shall see it? They shall go down to the bars of the pit when our rest together is in the dust. You're not offering me any hope. You're not giving me any hope. But I have hope in God, and he gives me hope, but you don't. You'll see that was the way Job was thinking here. Chapter 18 and verse 1. Then answered Bildad the Shuhite and said, how long will it be ere you make an end of words? Mark, and afterwards we will speak. How long are you going to stop babbling away like this, Job? You're just spouting off a bunch of empty words and vanity, touting how great you are and how great all the things you've done are, and you're not looking and seeing how wicked you are, or you wouldn't be in this plight. That's what Bildad's message is. Verse 3, wherefore are we counted as beasts and reputed vile in your sight. He tears himself in his anger. Shall the earth be forsaken for you? Shall the rock be removed out of his place? Why do you think you're so important? So everything should grind to a halt. Why, poor old Job is sitting there having such pain. Such a big deal you're making out of this whole thing. And you ought to be ashamed of yourself. And you call us beasts when you're really acting like a beast. Verse 5, yea, the light of the wicked shall be put out, and the spark of his fire shall not shine. That means you, Job, his friend is saying. But he's not saying it properly. And he's not representing the truth. And he's not conducting himself as a friend, and he's not teaching the truth about God and giving Job proper input and understanding here, which he should be doing, but he's not, this friend of his, Bildad. The light shall be dark in his tabernacle, and his candle shall be put out with him. His life is coming to an end, and his life is miserable, and his successes have turned to failures. The steps of his strength shall be straightened or shortened, and his own counsel shall cast him down. His own words are going to do him in. For he is cast into a net by his own feet, and he walks upon a snare. You've done it to yourself, Job. It's all you're doing. The gin shall take him by the heel, and the robber shall prevail against him. The snare is laid for him in the ground, and a trap for him in the way. Terror shall make him afraid on every side, and shall drive him to his feet. His strength shall be hunger-bitten, and destruction shall be ready at his side. All of this is going to fall on you, Job, and is already falling on you, and it's because you are wicked. That's why you're wicked. Otherwise, this wouldn't be happening. This doesn't happen to righteous people. It happens to wicked people. Can't you see that, Job? And yet these men are wicked in the way they're conducting themselves. And Job is not wicked. He's having to learn a hard lesson. But he's a righteous man, but he's also become self-righteous. And Job's example just shows that sometimes upright, righteous people suffer too and have to learn lessons and be tested. But that doesn't mean they're wicked. Now, sometimes maybe the trouble is because of a mistake they made. But sometimes it isn't because of a mistake they made. It could be somebody else's mistake, and they're having to learn while they go through the results of somebody else's mistake. In Job's case, it was a mistake, it was a flaw, it was a sin he had, it's called self-righteousness. But they're missing the mark. While they supposedly try to help him, they're actually harming him. Verse 11, terrors shall make him afraid on every side and shall drive him to his feet. His strength shall be hunger-bitten, and destruction shall be ready at his side. It shall devour the strength of his skin. Even the firstborn of death shall devour his strength. His confidence shall be rooted out of his tabernacle, and it shall bring him to the king of terrors. It shall dwell in his tabernacle, in his tent, in his life, in his home, in his family. It shall dwell in his tabernacle because it is none of his. Brimstone shall be scattered upon his habitation. I want to read Job 18 and verse 15 in the Revised Standard Version. I think it will clarify it a little bit. Job 18 and verse 15, beginning in verse 14, this is the RSV. He is torn from the tent in which he trusted, and is brought to the king of terrors. In his tent dwells that which is none of his. Brimstone is scattered upon his habitation. Trouble and terror and brimstone is scattered all about him. That's a clearer translation of Job 18 and verse 14 and 15. Now continuing in verse 16, his roots shall be dried up beneath, and above all, and above, his roots shall be dried up beneath, and above shall his branch be cut off. He's dying. He's being destroyed. His remembrance shall perish from the earth. And he shall have no name in the street. His reputation is so bad now, his legacy is going to be wiped out. Nobody will remember and nobody care because he's wicked. And that's you, Job, is what he's saying. He shall be driven from light into darkness and chased out of the world. He shall neither have son nor nephew among his people, nor any remaining in his dwellings. His whole family is going to be wiped out. They that come after him shall be astonished at his day, as they that went before were affrighted. Everybody around him is going to be suffering. There will be collateral damage, and they will be shocked at what's happening to him and what's happening to them by extension. Verse 21, surely such are the dwellings of the wicked, and this is the place of him that knows not God. And that's what you are. You're wicked, Job, and you don't know God, when in fact Job was not wicked, and in fact he knew God and was very close to God. So they were wrong in their conclusions and in their accusations. But that also was a part of Job's trial that he was going through. Is he going to stay faithful to God as he suffers agonizing disease and pain and bodily breakdown? And also, is he going to stay faithful to God when everybody turns against him? His family, his wife told him to curse God and die. His friends, there he is, sitting there all alone, sore and in pain and suffering. And then nobody there to care for him, nobody there to help him, nobody there to encourage him, but God. And so he relied on God, he looked to God, he spoke the truth about God, he waited on God, while wondering, why is all of this happening? It all came out of nowhere, and it came so suddenly, and it was so massive. What in the world is going on? But I am not going to turn my back on God. And though he slay me, I'm not going to forsake him. And he didn't. But at the same time, he still wasn't learning the lesson he had to learn. He will later, but it's taking quite a while for him to. He was such a strong man. He was so intelligent. He had such character. He had such tremendous capabilities. He wasn't really grasping his weakness of self-righteousness. Not yet. So he had to suffer some more. He had to suffer ridicule, accusations, and attacks from every corner, as well as the pain and the agony of his sores and his boils and the worms crawling into his skin. And just imagine the agony day and night that he went through. No relief, no let up, no help from anybody except God. And God saw to it that Job could keep going. And God is not going to put on anybody more than he can bear with his help. And he saw to it that Job wasn't taken to the point of complete breakdown. He was taken close, but not all the way. And God was there with him, making sure that he would not totally break down, but instead would go far enough to learn this lesson of self-righteousness that he had and look to God for everything instead of looking to himself too much. Even though he did look to God, but he also looked to himself too much, and Job hadn't learned that yet. But that's not what he was being taught by those who were supposed to be there helping him. Chapter 19, verse 1, Job answers this man, Bildad, who just had his turn at pounding away at him. And here's his answer to him, chapter 19 and verse 1. Then Job answered and said, how long will you vex my soul and break me in pieces with words? How long are you going to torment me this way? These 10 times have you reproached me. You are not ashamed that you make yourself strange to me. And be it indeed that I have erred, my error remains with myself. You may be right, I've erred. But I'm the one responsible for it. I've got to pay for it. You don't have to add to what I'm having to pay for this error that I must have committed to be suffering. So, what I'm going through is pain enough. You don't have to add to it. If indeed you will magnify yourselves against me and plead against me my reproach, know now that God has overthrown me and has compassed me with his net. He'll take care of it. This is between me and him. He will handle it. He doesn't need your help to bring me down and help me realize my problem. Verse 7, behold, I cry out of wrong, but I am not heard. I cry aloud, but there is no judgment. He has fenced up my way that I cannot pass. He has set darkness in my paths. He has stripped me of my glory and taken the crown from my head. And he was a king, and he did have a crown, and he did have tremendous glory and authority, and God took it all away. So you don't need to take any more away. God's already taken it away. Verse 10, he has destroyed me on every side, and I am gone, and my hope has he removed like a tree. He has also kindled his wrath against me, and he counts me unto him as one of his enemies. His troops come together and raise up their way against me and encamp round about my tabernacle. He has put my brethren far from me and mine acquaintance, and are verily and mine acquaintance are verily estranged from me. My family, my brothers, my kinsfolk have failed, and my familiar friends have forgotten me. My close friends, they that dwell in my house, and my maids count me for a stranger. I am an alien in their sight. All of this God has seen fit to allow to happen to me. That's getting the point across to me. I don't need you to try to get the point across to me. Like he said in verse 4, and be it indeed that I have erred, my error remains with me. And that's enough suffering. You don't have to add to that. Even my kinfolks, verse 14, have failed, and my familiar or close friends have forgotten me. They that dwell in my house and my maids count me for a stranger. I am an alien in their sight. I called my servant, and he gave me no answer. I entreated him with my mouth. My breath is strange to my wife, though I entreated for the children's sake of mine own body. My wife won't have anything to do with me. She's not even close to me. I'm repulsive to her. I couldn't even see my children. I couldn't even be with her and be with a family. Everybody's turned on me. My breath is strange to my wife, though I entreated for the children's sake of my own body. I wanted to see my wife. She's the one who gave me my children. And she wouldn't have anything to do with me. Yea, young children despised me. I arose and they spoke against me. Even they turned on me. All my inward friends abhorred me, and they whom I loved are turned against me. This is really a tough time for Job. My bone cleaves to my skin and to my flesh, and I am escaped with the skin of my teeth. I have lost so much weight, and I have slipped so far in my condition that I'm just skin and bone sitting here waiting to die, and nobody cares anything for me. Not even my kinfolk, not even my friends, not even my wife, not even my brothers, not even children. I'm alone. And then he says, verse 21, have pity upon me. Have pity upon me, O you, my friends, for the hand of God has touched me. Where's your pity? Where's your mercy? Where's your compassion? Where's your kindness? Why are you so mean and hateful and rude and harsh in your dealings with me right when I needed you? You're not there. Why do you persecute me as God and are not satisfied with my flesh? Why do you persecute me or punish me as God is allowing me to be punished? Why aren't you helping? Why aren't you consoling me? God will take care of the punishment. You need to help me and console me. Verse 23, oh, that my words were now written. Oh, that they were printed in a book. Well, his words did end up being written, and they did end up being printed in a book, and we're reading from that book right now, the book of Job. So what he was wishing for in verse 23 actually did end up happening, and we have it right now in the Bible. It's called the book of Job. Verse 24, that they were graven with an iron pen and lead in the rock forever. For I know that my Redeemer lives and that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. So he never turned his back on God. He never rebelled against God. Through it all, he says, I know that my Redeemer lives. I know that my Redeemer lives and that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth, speaking of Jesus Christ. And though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I see God. I want to read this in the RSV, Job 19 and verse 26. It says, and after my skin has been thus destroyed, then from my flesh I shall see God. And a better translation of this is, without my flesh. Without my flesh, I shall see God, or apart from my flesh, I shall see God, is what a correct translation renders that particular verse. Job 19 and verse 26. Though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet apart from my flesh shall I see God. Without my flesh shall I see God. So he knows that he's going to see God again, but he won't be in the flesh. He'll be in the spirit. He'll be born of the spirit. He'll be resurrected and see God as a spirit being, is what that verse means in verse 26 of Job 19. Whom I shall see for myself, and my eyes shall behold, and not another, though my reins be consumed within me. I'm going to be able to see him for myself. I'm going to be able to be there with him myself. I won't have to rely on somebody else telling me about God and about seeing God. I'll see him personally as a spirit being. And that's what I'm looking forward to. I know my Redeemer lives, as he said in verse 25, that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. Christ is coming again, and Job says, I'll see him then, apart from my flesh, because I'll be a spirit being. Verse 28, but you should say, why persecute we him, seeing the root of the matter is found in me? You should be saying, we don't need to add any more to his problems. The problem is his. He'll work his way through it. He'll learn from it. And God will teach him. We need to be comforting him instead of just adding and adding and heaping more on him, is what Job is saying. Verse 29, be you afraid of the sword, for wrath brings the punishments of the sword, that you may know there is a judgment. You tell me to be weary and be afraid of the sword and punishment. That's what you three miserable comforters are to be afraid of and be aware of, because you're going to have to answer for all of this rhetoric and all of these accusations and all of these harsh words that you're heaping on me. You will have to answer for that, and you will be judged on that. You're judging me, but you're going to be judged. You condemn, be careful. He that judges is going to be judged. Condemn not that you be not condemned. That's what the message is here, and that's what Job is saying. I want to turn over here to a chapter in Matthew that kind of sums up what's happening here with Job's quote-unquote friends as they attack him. Notice here in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 1, Jesus Christ said this, judge not that you be not judged, or condemn not that you be not condemned is a better translation. For with what condemnation or judgment you judge, you shall be judged. And with what measure you meet, it shall be measured to you again. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in your brother's eye, but consider not the beam that is in your own eye? Or how will you say to your brother, let me pull out the mote out of your eye, and behold, a beam is in your own eye? You hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of your own eye, and then shall you see clearly to cast out the mote out of your brother's eye. Mote being a little speck, not something really big at all. And that passage, Matthew 7, verse 1 through 5, applies perfectly to these three friends of Job who are guilty of what Jesus Christ is talking about there. And that's what Job is talking about in verse 29 of Job 19. Be you afraid of the sword, for wrath brings the punishment of the sword, and that you may know there is a judgment. And that brings us to chapter 20. And we'll stop there and pick it up next time with chapter 20 of Job. Until then, this is Charles Bryce with the Enduring Church of God.